A reading from Luke chapter 24, on the road to Emmaus. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened here in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while we talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?' They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembling together and saying, 'It is true. The Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread."
It's good to reflect, isn't it? Reflect on all sorts of things that life would bring at us. Reflect on our past, reflect on our present, reflect on the experiences that we've had. Experience is good, we learn by experience. But we really only properly learn as we take that experience and we reflect upon it. I'm not sure that's something I do often enough. But to reflect is good. We've just had Easter. We're kind of coming out of that Easter story, that Easter season. But we don't want to leave it behind, not that quickly, because it's so important. So I'd like us to reflect on that story. Indeed, on the things that we've done over the last little while when the guys were singing in the choir and we had some beautiful services. That Thursday night service, think about Gethsemane, was really powerful. Our Friday night, Good Friday, Tenebrae service was just... words cannot express what it was like. And then to celebrate down by the sea, the resurrection, and that service on Easter morning here. Just so many good things to reflect upon, but what is that Easter story all about? What does it have to say to us? Why do we do it? Why do we remember a death, a burial, a resurrection? What does it say to us? And does it demand a response from us? The story we've got today is of two disciples walking along a road to Emmaus. We may know the story pretty well, we may not. But these are two disciples who were reflecting who they were. We don't really know. One was named Cleopas. There's all sorts of wonderful ideas as to who the other might have been. There weren't some of the 12 disciples. Some people think maybe it was Luke who wrote the gospel because there's so much detail in it. Some people think that it may have been an uncle and an aunt of Jesus, because in John 19 it talks about a Cleopas, spelled slightly different, but some people think it's the same, and if that's the case, that was his uncle and an aunt. Was it two guys? Was it a husband and wife? Who was it? We don't really know. And it doesn't really matter. But as they walked that road to Emmaus, they reflected on that previous week, especially that previous weekend, all the things that had happened. And just like the other disciples, they couldn't quite get their head around it. So much had happened. And how do you take it all in? We look back 2,000 years, where we've thought about it many times. Even if we know the story very well, we know a little bit of the story, but for these disciples, these early disciples, they were making history, they were living history, they were in the midst of it all, and how can you put it all together? But they were reflecting on all the things that had happened. And then Jesus comes along and walks beside them. Wouldn't that have been brilliant? Just draws alongside them and says, "Hey guys, what are you talking about?" Well, we're talking about all the kind of stuff that's happened in Jerusalem this weekend. Everything happened this weekend. Are you a stranger? Are you just coming into town? Have you come from outer space? You don't know what's been going on? And he said, "What things have been going on?" It's great. The one who was the central character in the story is saying, "What are you talking about, guys?" So they began to reflect. He helped them to reflect further, and they told them the story about the one that they had put their hope in. We had hoped. It's a cry maybe some of us have often had. We had hoped. But they had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. But it hadn't worked out that way. What was going on? He had come into town riding on a donkey. People had cheered. A few days later, they weren't cheering anymore. They were shouting, "Crucify him, the one that we had placed our hopes upon." And he was taken. He was arrested. He died. And we had hoped. And then, this morning, because this was the same day, this was the Sunday, this was the day of resurrection, then some of our women went to the tomb, they found it empty, the stone had been moved, they found the grave closed, so the disciples, including Peter and John, had gone along to have a look, they found the tomb empty, and they couldn't work out what was going on. And this is the third day since he died. All this stuff in their heads, but they couldn't quite piece it together. But Jesus was about to piece it together for them. How long would it take you to walk 7 miles? A couple of hours anyway. Jen, you could do it in 1 hour, I know that. A couple of hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. It's going to be a bit of a journey, wasn't it? To have Jesus walking beside you, teasing out the things that really you know, but you hadn't got it all together up in here. Wow, that must have been amazing. And it was a bit like, it reminded me of like a TV program where the detectives are trying to piece it all together, and they've got their storyboard and they've got the photograph of the victim and the suspects, and they try to piece the story together to look at the evidence to see where it all pointed to. And I think that's what Jesus did, because that's what it says that he did do. He said to them, "How foolish you are," in verse 25, "how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets had spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. And so he helped them to reflect not only on what had happened that weekend, but in the whole history of their people. As he went from Genesis all the way through, showed them how all the scriptures pointed to this moment, this weekend, this man. And so we're going to have a little storyboard here. And I'm sure he started right back in Genesis, at the beginning, in Eden, the Garden of Eden, which was a place of perfection. It was perfect. They had the wonderful relationship with God. They could walk with him in the cool of the day. They had access to the tree of life. It was just brilliant. And then Satan comes along and whispers in their ears and says, "Do you really need him? If you eat the fruit of that tree that he told you not to, you could be like him." And they fell for it. Why did they fall for it? We wouldn't have fallen for it, would we? Well, of course we would. Why do we always fall for the lie that we don't need him? But we call it the fall because they fell from grace. They fell in so many ways. They were exiled from the garden. They no longer had access to the tree of life. They were exiled. But God didn't want them to be outside. God wanted them to be inside with him. But he had a plan. And he told Satan the plan. The very first mention of the gospel, Genesis 3, verse 15, where he said, the seed of the woman and Satan, there would be enmity between them. And someone, the seed of the woman, would crush his head and he would bruise his heel. That was the crucifixion. Satan had bruised the heel of Jesus as he died, but Jesus crushed his head as he rose again. Death was dead. Love had won. Christ had conquered. So you would have told them about that verse. They would have said, oh yeah, I remember that. This was the plan that God had. They were outside, but he was going to bring them inside through his son. Then maybe he talked to them about Genesis chapter 12, about Abraham, where he called Abraham and he said, Abraham, I'm going to do something brand new in your life. This is going to be a whole new beginning. I am going to make your offspring like the stars in the sky or the grains of sand on the beach. And Abraham was very old, and his wife Sarah was too. How could they have offspring as numerous as the stars in the sky? It was just crazy. But Abraham believed. And so off he went. Didn't know where he was going, but God said, I will show you, I'll take you to land. It was the land that he had promised. It was the promised land. And off he went. Then a long time later, he did have a son. God had told him that he would have offspring as numerous as the stars in the sky. And he said, out of this offspring, you will be a blessing to all the nations. And from Abraham came the Jewish nation. And from the Jewish nation came the Messiah, Jesus. This was the blessing. But he had that son, Isaac. It had waited a long time for Isaac, but Isaac came. And do you remember God asked him to sacrifice Isaac? He said, I want you to take your son, your only son, and go to Mount Moriah, 3 days' journey. And Isaac carried the wood for the sacrifice. And as they got closer to Mount Moriah, he said, hey, Dad, what are we going to use for a sacrifice? And Abraham said, don't you worry, it'll be okay. But they arrived at Mount Moriah. And we know that Isaac was going to be the sacrifice. But as he was about to kill him, the Lord stopped him and said, don't do that. Not an amazing story. And Jesus would have said to them, you know, that is a story that points to me. Because 2,000 years later, a father would send his only son onto that same mountain. The hill outside Jerusalem was Mount Moriah. Isaac was not a baby. Some people speculate that maybe he was, like Jesus was, in his 30s. But this time, God would not stop the hand of the Father, and the Son would die. The Lord would provide, but he would provide through this Son. A beautiful picture of what was to come. And story after story, he enveloped, unfolded. The story of Moses, the greatest man in their history, maybe that great story of the Exodus. Moses, I want you to go and set my people free. Go back to Egypt, we're in the land of slavery. And you will bring them out. You will be their redeemer. You will lead them out to the promised land. You will save them from their sin. You will save them from their enslavement. And everybody knew, those disciples knew that story really well. But that was a picture of Jesus coming to set us free from the enslavery of sin. Setting us free, bringing us out to a promised land, to his land. Moses was a prophet. Jesus was a prophet. Just like Moses. He was a rescuer, just like Moses. That story pointed to this story. It was the fulfillment of the story. The great lawgiver. There was a sacrificial system that they're all very aware about. They knew sin was serious, and because sin was serious, someone had to die, an animal had to die, blood had to be shed. It was a picture of the blood that would be shed that weekend that they knew, on a cross. Or he would have pointed to the greatest king in their history, King David, who was a shepherd boy. And the one to come like Jesus would be known as the good shepherd who would lay down his life for the sheep. Or is that wonderful story of David fighting Goliath? It was God's man, God's chosen person, God's anointed one, David, fighting all that was anti-God, the Philistine, Goliath. And David won, not because he was strong, but because God was with him. That was a picture of Jesus defeating Satan on the cross, all that was godly against all that was not, and winning. He would have gone through the prophets, many prophets. Prophets like Micah, who said, this Messiah will come, and he'll be born in, not in Jerusalem in a palace, he'll be born in little, lowly Bethlehem. Or prophets like Zechariah, who would say, this king will come not on a war horse, but look, this king is coming on a donkey. And Zechariah would say that he will be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. Or someone like Isaiah, that they knew that he'd be born of a virgin. That he would be a king like no other, for he would be a suffering servant. He would bear the sins of many. He would be pierced for our transgressions. So as all of those stories came together over those 2, 3, 4 hours of a 7-mile journey, what was going on inside their heads? It was getting dark. Jesus went to go on. They said, no, stay, stay. So he did. And he came in to eat with them. The Bible's full of people eating together. Eating is a good thing to do, because it was when they were eating that they recognized who Jesus was, and he disappeared from their sight. And as they reflected on the journey of 7 miles, they said, were not our hearts burning inside us as he opened up the Bible to us? Wasn't that amazing? I've never heard of it like that before. I've never thought of it like that before. This is fabulous. But all of the Bible from Genesis onward pointed to this time, to this man, to Jesus, giving his life. This is how it had to be. The Messiah would die, but the Messiah would be raised. So as we reflect on Easter, what does Easter have to say to us as we've gone through this past week? And what response do we bring to that reflection, to that story that is for you? As I reflect, I think about those lovely services, and I particularly think about that time as we were thinking about Gethsemane and Jesus in the garden under such heavy pressure that he sweat drops of blood and said, Father, let this hour pass from me. If it is possible, take this cup away from me, and yet not my will, but your will be done. A battle was fought in the garden. Victory was secured in the garden. Or as he hung on that cross and all those wonderful things that he said, but that great cry of victory, it is finished. And then it said, he said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. He was saying, I hand over my spirit to you, because Jesus was in control of all of this. Every step along the way, he was in control. And so as we think about that phrase, handing your spirit over, that's exactly what had happened. Judas handed over Jesus to the soldiers, and the soldiers handed Jesus over to the high priest, and the high priest handed Jesus over to Pilate, and Pilate handed Jesus over to the people to be crucified. But Jesus was in control all along the way. And even at the moment of his death, it was for him to say, "I hand my spirit to you, Father, for it is finished." What we've done today in the baptism is kind of a handover. When Paul and Kira hand over Jenny into the safe and wonderful care of the God who made her, saying, "We know you know what is best. We know that you love her more than we do, even though we love her very much. We know that you made her, even though we kind of made her too. But we hand her back into your care because we want her to be blessed by you. And that in a dark and confusing and dangerous world, we want her to be yours." Jesus handed back his spirit for a time into the hands of one who would take care of that spirit. But what about us as we reflect? Is there stuff in our lives that we need to hand over? Worries that we've got that we need to give? Or maybe even more profoundly, a life that we need to give to him, hand it over to him. This church only stands here because of this story. There's no death, no resurrection. What we do is a farce. Crazy. But it actually happened. The God of this world came and walked on our ground and died our death and defeated sin and death and hell. And because of that, you can live. As we give back to him what really belongs to him in the first place. So how do you reflect on Easter? How do you reflect on this story? What is your response?